Hopkins. Bryant for the win.
Interviews from your favorite local coaches and athletes.
He's getting to the basket at will, and he's hitting that three-point shot with some consistency now, and he's just in a groove right now where he's pretty well unstoppable.
Hall of Fame and legendary guests.
I was driven by loving to play, liking the challenge of being an NFL quarterback, but after 18 years, I was 1 month short of 39 years old. It's time to go.
Analysis and insight on the latest national sports topics. Live, it's Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM and 7:50 AM.
Nick Saban has won his seventh national championship, and the wacky college football season of 2020 is over. Welcome into a brand new edition of Drive Time Sports. I'm your host, Jordan Buscarini. It's Football Tuesday. That's what this entire show is going to be built around. We will talk college. We're going to be joined by Antoine Staley, great friend of the show. He's joined us each week throughout the college football season. And now that it's over, we'll recap what we saw last night. A 52-24 win for Alabama. Seven national championships for Nick Saban. Six at Alabama. And that team was so amazingly good. Offensively, it may be one of the best offensive teams in the history of college football, seriously. We'll look at how many first-round picks this team has a little bit later on in the show, but look, be it Notre Dame, be it Ohio State, Texas A&M, it didn't matter. Nobody could keep pace with that blistering-style offense. Devontae Smith had arguably the greatest first half in college football history on that stage. Right on the big grand stage. He was unstoppable, leaves the game, and still ended up with 215 yards. We'll talk college football. We'll also start previewing the divisional round of the NFL. We have four games this week, and I think all four have their own little piece of intrigue with them. I'm extremely excited to see the Browns and the Chiefs. I'm really excited to see the Rams and the Packers. It's 2 6-1s. Which one of those six seeds is the best chance of picking up a win and advancing? Plus, we'll take a look at the structure between the Bills. You have to pay attention now to the Saints, who snuck one. Well, I shouldn't say snuck one out. Won ugly against the Chicago Bears. They didn't sneak it out. They were in control, but they won ugly. Now, the Bills, they snuck one out. We'll talk NFL football as well. It's Football Tuesday, and it's here on Drive Time Sports. We're back in just a moment.
Since they want to know. You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 7:50 AM.
Last night, the college football season came to an end, and it shouldn't have been a surprise for anyone. If it was, you were thinking with your heart and not your head. Alabama pulls away for a national championship victory, the seventh for Nick Saban. Six at Alabama, one at LSU. As they stomp Ohio State 52-24. We're going to talk about that game and more right now with our next guest, Antoine Staley. He's joined us each week throughout the college football season to break things down. And Antoine, no surprise last night. Once again, Alabama, top team of the country. At the beginning of the year, I think maybe there were thoughts that this defense had enough holes in it to where a team like an Ohio State, like a Clemson, maybe even a Notre Dame could give them a run for their money. But at the end of the day, whatever you think about the defense, the offense was just that elite, and it was on display once again last night.
That's why I tried to tell people. This wasn't one of Nick Saban's best defenses, but their offense was so good that their defense could allow their defense to be average. And that's all they needed to be, and they put it on. Put it on Ohio State pretty early and really didn't give up throughout the course of the game. And they felt pressure that you essentially had to score every single time you had the ball. And that's kind of what Alabama had to do. And that's sort of what LSU did last year offensively too as well. That, yeah, every time they had the ball, like you had to try to at least contain them to three. If not, then it was going to be a long day for you.
Yeah, and I mean, the statistic that popped up last night, which is kind of mind-boggling, close to 750 days, only one team has been able to hold Alabama under 35 points in a game. And in that game, Alabama scored 31. That was in the semifinals against Notre Dame. That's it. So if you think it was just a one-year trend with this offense, that was not the case. It was the same concept last year.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I thought Alabama had a great offense last year. It's just the fact that Tua ended up getting hurt, and then I felt like the LSU team was just a little bit better, especially defense. Felt like they were better than Alabama, but man, I thought coming into the season Alabama would be the best team. I know a lot of people looked at Clemson and Trevor Lawrence and what he brought to the table, and thought they might be better, and thought they would be the team to beat in the NCAA for the championship. But I just love what Alabama had coming back, and I thought Mac Jones getting that experience later on in the season when Tua went down would be beneficial, and it certainly was coming into the year.
Yeah, no question. No question about it. In fact, we can talk about some of the skill position players on Alabama, and we'll dive into the NFL in just a moment and what the draft may hold in the opening round for Bama. But I'm not being a prisoner in the moment, not getting caught up in hyperbole, just looking at things realistic. Can you tell me a more dynamic college football player over the last 20, 25, 30 years than Devontae Smith, who last night left with an injury, still had 12 catches for 215 yards and 3 touchdowns. Obviously, the Heisman winner, well-deserving of that prestigious award. But in your mind, over the last 20, 25 years, can you think of another guy that was more dynamic?
I would go with he's in the Reggie Bush category. You kind of throw Adrian Peterson in there, 25 years. I guess you throw Charles Woodson in there too as well. But it's a very small list of players that you think of that was just dynamic in his performance. Like they knew he was the guy to stop. And, you know, you had Jaylen Waddle out there who was out there. He shouldn't have been out there, to be honest with you, but he was way less than 100%. And they still couldn't stop him. They tried to throw everything at him, and he was still finding ways to get open. And he was just had a dynamic, and one of the best first half performances I've seen on any stage. Whether you talk about NFL, NBA, whatever the case may be, like he dominated the first half, and there wasn't nothing Ohio State could do. So yeah, you look at the performance there. I'm curious to see where he's going to go in the draft, because a lot of people have talked about how you don't take wide receivers so early, but man, he's not like most wide receivers there. A lot of people are comparing him to Marvin Harrison, and I think those are really pretty good comparisons when you talk about what he can do out there on the football field.
Yeah, you know, the Marvin Harrison comparison, when that popped up last night, I see it, but in the same sense, we're talking about a kid that is slender, and a kid that is, correct me if I'm wrong, he's faster than Marvin Harrison as well.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, he's definitely a lot faster. I think more or less for me, the comparison is probably the route running and how slender they are and the ability just to get open. And that's what sticks out to me. But yeah, I think he's definitely a faster wide receiver than Marvin. I think the scary thing about it is he's faster and he's just as good as a route runner, at least at this stage right now. And he's better than – I mean, you put him on any NFL roster, he's better – he's at least your number two wide receiver
right now.
That's
yeah.
How good I think he is right now. Somebody asked me what kind of impact would he have on what teams would he have an impact on, and I said everybody, even the Kansas City Chiefs. He would be the second best receiver on the Chiefs right now. That's how good of a receiver I think he is.
Yeah, I mean, he's absolutely fantastic. And I think, again, just speaking to what Alabama has had over the last couple of years, Jaylen Waddle and Devontae Smith were plugged behind, on a depth chart, they were plugged behind two first-round picks, for crying out loud.
Yes, and Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy.
Yeah.
And you talk about embarrassment or rich. That is insane when you think about that. You have two first-round receivers last year, and then you're going to have two again this year, and they were all on the same roster.
Right.
I don't know. Like, I feel like their defense was better this year than it was last year, even though it wasn't a whole lot better. But, yeah, this is talking about a team that I think if they end up beating LSU last year and Tua ends up staying healthy, I think they have a good possibility they could have went back-to-back. That's how good of an offense they really have.
Again, Antoine Staley, our guest right now of Athlon Sports. And Antoine, we can talk about the impact of the legacy, and I hate legacy talk. Look, Nick Saban's already the greatest college football coach to ever live. I'll have that debate with anyone. The guy's now won 7 national championships. He's won 6 at Alabama. But I can throw one more stat that's kind of mind-boggling out there. Every kid that Nick Saban has brought to play football at Alabama since 2007 has won a national championship. think about that. That is we're in 2021, and since he became the head coach at Alabama, every freshman that he has recruited has won a national championship.
That's why people want to go play for him. Yeah, I saw, you look at the secondary last night, and I saw a picture of it, and none of them, the guys were from Alabama. They were all from South Florida, either Miami or Fort Lauderdale area. And Miami, take us all about the state of Florida and the talent that they have there. But as long as Alabama is winning consistently, he's going to get those guys. And you have to think that really hurts some of the other programs like a Miami or like a Florida State or even Florida to an extent, even though the Gators played really well this year. But as long as they continue to keep winning, they're going to get the best talent in college football year in and year out. And that's just kind of how it's going to be. And not only that, not only are they winning, he is also getting players to the NFL. So you're winning, you're getting players to the NFL, and they don't rebuild, they reload there, and they're going to continue to do so. And I don't know when he plans on retiring. I wouldn't think anytime soon. So he could win another two or three more national titles before his career is all over.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. When you look at the amount of NFL first-round talent, just first-round talent on this year's team, as you alluded to, kids wanting to come and play, and you have that NFL in your back pocket as well. Antoine, you and I were just talking off the cuff before we hopped on air off the top of our heads. We came up with about six, possibly seven first-round draft picks on this year's team.
Yeah, I mean, you got the obvious, the usual suspects. You got the ones everybody knows, obviously. Got Smith. We talked about Matt Jones there for a little bit there. Waddle, I think, is going to be a first-round pick. Najee Harris is going to be a first-round pick. Patrick Surtain is going to be a first-round pick. And, yeah, they could also have a lineman or two also being taken. So, yeah, they're definitely threatening to be the team that could have the most first-round picks ever in the history of the NFL draft. That's how insanely talented this group is. And, I mean, and this year's team, a lot of people are looking at that. It could be even just as good. I mean, you'd have a new quarterback in there, new skill position players, but they're young and hungry, and they're a lot better than a lot of, probably about 90-95% of the college teams out there already, with not a lot of experience other than playing in garbage time situations.
Again, Antoine Staley, our guest right now. Antoine, we have to talk about Ohio State for just a moment. I mean, really early on in this contest, it's 7-7 at the end of the opening quarter. Bama blows it open in the second, 28-10, but at times in this game, Justin Fields did look pretty good. I know the final numbers, if you just look at the box score, you didn't watch the game, you'd look at 17 for 33 and 194 yards, and you'd say, really? That's it? At times in this game, Justin Fields made a couple of passes, and I don't believe he was 100% in this game either. He made a couple of throws last night that I thought weren't necessarily game changers, but I go back to the pass that he had to Garrett Wilson, which brought the lead. I think it brought Ohio State within 14, if memory serves me correct. I thought Justin Fields was actually pretty good last night.
Yeah, I thought he did everything he could do. It's just a really tough situation where you see the Alabama offense, and you look again. You have to score every single time you have the ball. That puts so much pressure on all aspects of your team. And I thought for the situation that he was in, I thought he did. I think pretty well. Ohio State stayed in it at least to the second half. I mean, they could have just folded up shop after halftime, and I don't think anybody else would have, you know, blinked an eye or doubted. But they kept fighting. They kept fighting until the second half, and then Alabama just became really, really too much. The depth of that team is just so deep offensively, and also they made some plays defensively too. They kind of get some pressure on Fields as well. So, yeah, I don't fault him at all. I think he made himself a lot of money in the playoffs. I think it's going to be interesting to see where he's projected to go. Some people talk about him going possibly to the Jets at number two. You talk about the Carolina Panthers also need a quarterback. The Atlanta Falcons are interesting. Dynamic. He is from the Georgia area, Atlanta. So that could be a fit there depending on how long they see Matt Ryan playing. But, yeah, I thought he – he played really well in the playoffs, and I think he showed a lot of people that the Northwestern game was a bit of a fluke, even though Northwestern did a good job on him in the Big Ten championship.
Antoine, it's been a pleasure all year long. Once again, to catch up with you and talk college football week in and week out. I hope we can get back together as far as the NFL draft is concerned. I know we get up for it here. You definitely do as well, but it is always a pleasure. I appreciate the time. Before I let you go, let the listeners know where they can find more of your work.
You find me at Antoine Sports. Also find me at Twitter at Antoine Staley.
Antoine, again, thank you so much for the time today.
Yeah, thank you.
Let's take a quick commercial break. When we return, we'll move over to the NFL. We have divisional games to start talking about. Heavy slate of NFL football coming up Saturday and Sunday. That's next right here on Drive Time Sports.
Now, more Drive Time Sports on KOAL, 107.3 FM and 750 AM. The play-by-play home of the Emory Spartans.
We're back on Drive Time Sports. It's Football Tuesday on 107.3 FM and 750 AM. I love this week because it is the best football that you'll see over the course of 2 days all year long. Super Wild Card was great. We had some good matchups. But when you get down to the final eight teams in the NFL, you get good football over the course of Saturday and Sunday. We're talking about the eight best teams in the league. And I, you know what? I truly believe we have the best eight teams still playing in the league. And Vinny, we'll start with the AFC. If you look at the matchups, Kansas City, Cleveland, and then you look at Buffalo and Baltimore. AFC playoff picture is fantastic. Those are great matchups.
Yeah, these are great matches. Baltimore's super hot. Buffalo has played the best football they've played. It's their first home playoff win in, 25 years?
Yeah, I was 9 years old the last time they won a playoff game.
Cleveland, with all they went through to go on the road against a hated rival and put it on them, very impressive. They get a little mojo going. So let me ask you this, Jordan. Hidden factor in each one of these games, an X factor in each one of these games. The casual fan's not going to, you know, think about these things. Give me, in each one of these games, a hidden factor or hidden player.
Okay, let's start with Baltimore and Buffalo. Because in my mind, the hidden factor in this game, it's what Baltimore can do defensively up front. They were fantastic in the game against Tennessee, were they not?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean,
their defense was awesome.
It was, and we talk about this offense all the time. We talk about Lamar Jackson. And again, as you alluded to, typically the casual football talk will revolve around the quarterback. Lamar Jackson can't win a playoff game. He was horrible last year in the playoffs. He was horrible the year before that in the playoffs. That was the storyline. But for me, the fact that they stifled Derrick Henry and the Tennessee Titans, that was one of the most compelling storylines of the Super Wild Card round. And it's gonna play a factor in this game because, again, we talk about Josh Allen and we talk about his accuracy. That's what everybody always talks about, his accuracy. Why is it that we never really focus on Josh Allen getting outside of the pocket and making plays with his feet? I don't know why that is, but the big knock on Josh Allen has always been his accuracy. And I know they have Stephon Diggs. I understand that. It may have been the best offseason move now that we're to the divisional round.
Best offseason move of the
maybe.
Year.
But for me, can you contain Josh Allen, the runner? Can Baltimore do that? We saw him do it with Derrick Henry, and that's okay when it's inside the numbers, right? When you're interior.
Yeah, and that's a physical runner.
It's a physical runner.
Yeah, he's not getting to the edge.
Between the tackles.
Yes, he's not getting to the edge.
He's not
going to
get to the edge.
Run around you.
And when I look at Buffalo, yeah, they have a couple of backs that can get to the outside. That's fine and dandy. But if Josh Allen gets outside the tackles and makes impact plays, this Buffalo offense looks completely different. That's when Stephon Diggs opens up. Because what happens when Josh Allen gets outside the tackle? What does the defense have to do when he gets outside of the tackles in the pocket? What happens?
They got to come forward.
They got to come forward.
And they've got to gang tackle him. He's so big.
And that's when a guy like Stephon Diggs changes the complexity of the game, right? So in my mind, can you contain Josh Allen inside the pocket? Can you keep him in between the tackles? And if the Baltimore defense can do that, they have a great chance to win this game. And
Agreed.
To me, that's the determining factor.
That's a great point. I agree with you. And for me, I think it's along the same lines. I was going to say it's Humphrey because he did a great job in A.J. Brown. Yeah. You know, he did get beat early, right? It was 10-0 Tennessee. And after that, he contained him. And guess what? The Tennessee offense was stifled because they crushed the line of scrimmage. They rushed the line. They run blitz. They twisted. They did whatever they could to stop Henry. Well, guess what? Tannehill couldn't get A.J. Brown the ball. If Humphrey can slow down Diggs, just slow him down, it changes everything. Like you said, they can keep him contained, but if he slows him down, I think the biggest thing, like you said, almost to the same point, is Stephon Diggs outside the pocket. Well, if they hold down Stephon Diggs, if Humphrey plays a man up, I think this is going to be a better game than we thought.
I think it's going to be a compelling game.
I think it's going to be a great game. And you know, another factor is, Jordan, how about both these teams getting over the hump?
Yeah,
like you mentioned, Lamar Jackson getting that off his back. Hey, I won a playoff game.
He'd never done it.
Buffalo. It's been 25 years.
And they have had games
where they should have won.
Yeah, they threw up all over themselves multiple times.
Last year, they had Tennessee beat. Josh Allen completely blows it.
Yep.
This year, he almost blows it. That sack he took, and that sack fumble he took there at the end of the game, that was hideous.
Mm-hmm.
That almost cost him the game.
It did.
But they made a play. They get the stop. They're celebrating in Buffalo. And so both these teams got over the hump a little bit, right? So this is going to be an awesome game. I think this one is going to be the best game of the weekend.
It's peaking at the right time, and I don't want to rub salt in the wounds of Steeler fans. But
yeah, they got enough to get over. That was pretty ugly.
It was bad, and I'm not trying to rub salt in the wound when I say this. But when you look at where the Steelers were at 11-0, you can't tell me they had not peaked at that particular time. They lost 5 out of 6 to close out the season.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, there's not a team that is playing better football at this moment than the Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, they're the hottest team.
They're the hottest team in the NFL.
Yeah.
Kansas City, Green Bay, I don't care. Whoever you want to throw at me, there is not a hotter team in the league right now than the Baltimore Ravens, and that accounts for a lot.
Yeah, it does. It does. And I like the way these teams match up. I think this one's going to be a lot of fun. I think this is going to be the best game. This is the one I want to see the most.
Who are you taking?
Buffalo.
I'm going to go with the Bills as well.
I like the home field advantage. I love those fans. I think that city's behind him. I kind of love the vibe that Buffalo's got going on. Josh Allen getting that first one, getting that first win. I like Buffalo. Close game, low scoring game, 24-20-ish, 24-22, somewhere in that neighborhood, 23-20. That's kind of what I'm thinking. It's going to be a physical game, but yeah, I like Buffalo.
It's a good game. It's not going to be a blowout.
No.
Baltimore has enough power offensively to keep it close. You know what? Okay, we were just talking about not being cliche, but I'm going to tell you what is cliche. Whichever quarterback
doesn't turn it over.
Doesn't turn the ball over.
Yeah.
And I say that because Josh Allen is prone to turning the football over. And Lamar Jackson is prone to the postseason. We've seen it. Track records do the math, right? He is prone to making dumb mistakes.
Yeah,
he made a dumb mistake. You go back to this game against Tennessee.
That offense wasn't great.
They only scored
20 points.
Yeah, they weren't great. So which quarterback is going to take care of the football? And that's going to be a reoccurring trend. Now, on the flip side, we talk about the other AFC game. First off, we're both in agreement. It's Buffalo.
Okay, we're
both
going to
go Buffalo. Now, you flip that over and you talk Kansas City-Cleveland. This is a case where a quarterback could make a couple of mistakes and you still get a victory. Right? And I'm talking about Kansas City. You can make a couple of mistakes. I believe Mahomes can make a couple of mistakes. You can force him into a couple of bad spots. And Kansas City may still be okay. The difference here is, Vinny, and this is where Cleveland is unpredictable to me. Can you think of a more potent 1-2 punch out of the backfield where these backs play off of each other than Chubb and Kareem Hunt?
No. And, the X factor, the thing for, the Browns is, after all they've been through, I mean, kudos to the Browns because that was incredible. People don't seem to realize that a whole week they couldn't practice. They had 4 coaches not even at the stadium.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what they did was incredible. Did Pittsburgh help them? Yes, they did. Pittsburgh helped them with some horrible turnovers. But for them to even be in a game with all they went through that whole week, that was awesome. That's incredible. I think the X factor here, the hidden factor, is going to be the first quarter of this game. And I say that, Jordan, because Andy Reid is so good after bye week, right? And he has a chance to really dissect this Cleveland team. He's had extra time to look at both teams. If the Browns don't, if they weather the storm and don't fall behind in the first quarter, because the Browns' pass defense is not great, right? The Browns' pass defense is not great.
No.
If they don't fall behind and they can use what you just said, them two running backs, to slow this game down, Kansas City hasn't been blowing people out. And Kansas City's defense, especially when they're not ahead, is not very good. So if the Browns weather the storm and they're not down 10-0, 14-0 the first quarter, and they slow it down and Chubb's gaining yardage, we're going to have ourselves a dogfight. And this game's going to be closer than a lot of people think.
I think it is going to be closer than a lot of people think, but kind of piggybacking off of what you were just saying, the Chiefs are going to score points in this game. There's no way around it.
But you got to hold them to 24.
Yeah, they're going to score 3 or 4 touchdowns in this game. They just are. For me, when I look at Cleveland, and I'll take it one step further than the running backs, one of the biggest disappointments for me all year long with Cleveland, and I don't know if the injury to Odell Beckham caused this, but I was thrilled for Cleveland when they signed Austin Hooper in the offseason.
Yeah.
I was thrilled. Because you put him opposite of David Njoku, and now you got Chubb and Hunt, and Njoku and Hooper. And Hooper was a ball player when he played for Atlanta, remember?
Yeah.
The receiving game from the tight end spot has been almost non-existent throughout the majority of the year for Cleveland.
Yeah, and they do need to step up.
And they have to step up.
They got to step up.
You can beat Kansas City deep all you want. That's not a recipe for success. Scoring fast on Kansas City is not the recipe for success. How do you take apart the middle of the field and the intermediate routes? Well, you do that with your tight ends, right?
Yeah, and if you're running the ball great on second and five, second and six, if Hooper gets 6-7 yards, that drive keeps going, right?
Yeah.
And the clock keeps going, and the clock keeps going. Yeah, I think you're right.
And I could be wrong here. I don't have the statistics in front of me, but I know Hooper had 7 or 8 grabs. That may have been the most that he has had in a game this season. Yeah. Like, they do not utilize the tight end. And maybe that changes if Odell's out there, because you got Landry and Odell on the outside, right? It opens things up a little bit more for the tight end. But when I look across the board, Travis Kelce may be the best tight end in football. It's a fair argument.
Yeah, absolutely. 49er
fans would argue with George Kittle. Whatever. He's one of the best tight ends in football. When you look at the double tight end options, teams that have had success in moving the ball down the field, they have two tight ends that can be effective across the middle of the field. Cleveland has that.
And Kareem Hunt can catch the football. Kareem Hunt
very well.
He can catch the football. And he's probably got a little chip on his shoulder coming
in this game.
Yeah,
oh, I would think
he does. So, yeah, for the recipe for the Browns is to weather the storm, and you got to have 5-minute drives, 8 to 10 play drives where you get points. You cannot afford, if you're the Browns, to take half a quarter, get down the field, and stall out and get nothing for it, because Mahomes is going to score. The NFL wants Mahomes to score, so you know he's going to score. So the Browns cannot take an 8-play drive, go 55, 60 yards, and stall out, not get nothing out of it, eating up time. When you take them long drives, if it takes half a quarter, 7 minutes, 8 minutes, 10 plays, 12 plays, which they want to do, pounding the ball, which they can do, because that defense, you know, they'll give that up. They're not great. You've got to get points at the end of those drives, though, Jordan. You've got to. And you try to not get field goals, because you don't want to play field goals with Patrick Mahomes. You don't.
But I sent you some in-depth statistics earlier this week on kicking.
Yes.
Last week, I broke it down game by game, every 3-score game. And I was kind of amazed at 3 or less. That was the object of it. Where I was looking at NFL games that were 3 or less. There was close to 60 games that were decided this year by 3 points or less. Teams that kick the most field goals win those games.
Wins those games. It can't stall out.
It's not the team that makes the most field goals. It's not. You and I broke that down and we looked at it.
Kicks the most field goals. Because they've moved into scoring position. And the difference between scoring position is 7-8 yards.
Mm-hmm.
7-8 yards. Is these guys at 55, 56 yards, they don't want to take that field goal 7-8 yards from now. Now at 48, 49, guess what? They're kicking those field goals. And the more they kick, the more they're winning. So the Browns, you've got to eat clock, big drives, beat the Chiefs up. But at the end of those, you've got to get points.
Who wins?
I'm going to take the upset because everybody's going against it. I'm just going to take the upset to say, you know, hey, I picked it. I'm going to pick Cleveland. I'm going to pick Cleveland in an upset. I just love that mojo. And finally, maybe we see Baker Mayfield become
the
alpha male.
Well,
you know, the quarterback.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's on TV and, you know, he gets the great interviews and, you know, they talk about him all the time. I haven't seen him a squat in the NFL. Last week, he did something.
I just feel, Vinny, in the AFC, and I know we're going to talk about the NFC in a moment, I feel like the top two teams in the AFC are much further ahead of the next 3 through 8 than in the NFC. I don't feel that way in the NFC. I don't look at the Packers and the Saints and say, there's no one that's going to beat these teams. When I look at Buffalo and Kansas City, it's going to take some doing for these two to not be the final two teams standing in the AFC. And so I got to go with Kansas City.
That's a great pick. Odds are they're going to win. But I'm just picking the underdog on that.
And you like the storyline.
I like the storyline. I love Cleveland being relevant. I love Cleveland's in the playoffs. We both, a couple weeks ago, were like, yeah, they're probably going to be, they're going to get left out.
They're not going to make it. It's going to be Miami.
Yeah.
All right.
And guess what? They come in and they beat, not only just, and I think it's special, and Browns fans for sure, it's special because they hate the Steelers.
Yeah, and the Steelers have made...
The Steelers have embarrassed them. They've been big brother for a very long time. Stat was going into the game, was it Roethlisberger? 23-2-1 against the Browns. I mean, come on.
That's phenomenal.
That's incredible. So there was some big brother there that for them to go on the road and beat them up. I just like that mojo. I like that story. I'm rooting for Cleveland.
All right. We'll talk NFC when we return in just a moment. It's Football Tuesday. One more segment coming up right after this.
I understand you're a real sports fan.
Well, then there's only one answer.
Turn on the radio. You'll never have to compromise again.
You're listening to Drive Time Sports with Jordan Buscarini on KOAL 107.3 FM at 750 AM.
We're back on Drive Time Sports, Football Tuesday. Going to close it out by talking NFC playoffs and the divisional round. Some really fun matchups this week, including the Rams and the Packers. Sean McVay and Matt LaFleur are going toe-to-toe. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that coaching matchup.
And these guys know each other.
They know each other. Look, there's a ringing endorsement from Sean McVay. It's part of the reason Matt LaFleur climbed the ranks so fast, right? He's got a proven track record. Aaron Rodgers, the league MVP. Aaron Donald, greatest football player on the planet.
Yeah, he's so incredible.
I mean, this is a fantastic matchup. And Vinny, you and I were talking off the cuff. I believe that the winner of this game goes to the Super Bowl out of the NFC.
I agree.
I said last week that the Rams would beat Seattle, and I thought they would beat them fairly convincingly. That team was built to beat Seattle.
Yeah.
And they did. They beat them convincingly.
I missed that one. I thought the home field and a non-healthy Goff would be a hindrance. It wasn't. They put it on them.
They beat them handily.
Yeah, they put it on them, yeah.
The defense itself won that game for the Rams. The defense is playing that spectacular. And so that's what I try to preach in this game. We look at the Packers. We look at the Rams. I understand how good Green Bay is. They embarrassed Tennessee a couple of weeks back. Mm-hmm. Embarrassed them. Right? But Chicago, Tennessee, the list goes on. I mean, look at the teams that they played, San Francisco. Green Bay has not seen a defense like the Los Angeles Rams, and that is going to be the determining factor in this game. The Rams' defense will keep them in every single contest. It's can the Packers control the Rams in the offensive line? And if they can do that, I think we have a lopsided Packers victory. If the Rams have success on the ground, I don't think anyone can beat the Rams. I'm being 100% serious when I say that. This defense is too good. You control the line of scrimmage, Vinny. You win football games. It's that simple.
Their defense is incredible. I think you make perfect points. I think if the Rams get the stretch game going, that they're going to win this football game. If they get that, if Akers gets to the edge and he gets that stretch going, they're going to bootleg off of it. They're going to run crossing routes. The Packers are going to try and play man coverage. You beat them with the crossing routes. Cooper Kupp and Woods are going to have a heyday with that if that stretch game's running. If the Packers set the edge early on and they take that away, you know, the weather, the factors, you know, you got a backup quarterback or an unhealthy quarterback, Aaron Donald's health is going to be huge because he's incredible. For the casual fan, if you guys just watch football, just focus on 99 if you're watching the game. Everybody should watch Aaron Donald play football.
He's amazing.
He's amazing. So this one's going to be, I think this one has... After all we talked about, I think this one's either going to be a blowout or going to be the best game of the weekend.
Yeah,
and
I
say that because the Rams, the stat you brought up, your Rams, you know them better than anybody, Jordan. Your Rams, they were the only team to turn the ball over, or it's been, 20 years since a team turned the ball over every game and made the playoffs?
2007, the New York Giants did.
Okay, 13 years. If they can control that and run the football, we're going to have an amazing football game.
Yeah, you know,
if the weather factors in and they don't run it and they got some injuries at quarterback, the Packers have a chance to blow them out.
The stat means a whole lot in this specific game just based off what we saw last week. A lot of experts picked Seattle to win that game. And I was dumbfounded by that. I told you, I just don't see this happening.
Yeah, you called it. You were right. I was wrong.
I just didn't see Seattle winning. But going back to it, it was the first time the Rams had not turned the ball over all year long. And it was a blowout. It was 30-13.
Yeah, they put it on them. Yeah,
before
they beat them.
Seattle scored a garbage time touchdown. The game was over, right? So, again, when you look at the Rams, we can pinpoint three or four games this year where we said, this team's a legitimate Super Bowl contender.
Absolutely.
They
looked incredible.
They ran the football. When they are not effective running the ball and Jared Goff has to throw the ball 30 to 35 times a game, they lose. They look below average.
Yeah, they do.
And it's as simple.
It's a team that lost to the Jets.
Exactly, because they couldn't run the football in that game. So when you look at the weather in Green Bay, the weather is only a factor if Jared Goff has to throw 30-plus times.
Exactly, you're
that's
exactly
the only
right.
The weather means nothing otherwise, because if you dominate in the trenches, you're keeping Aaron Rodgers on the sideline.
Yep.
The Rams have 6-, 7-, 8-minute drives where they can score effectively, and you take field goals if you can because your defense is good enough to keep the game close. But you have to run the ball effectively. And if they can establish that, the Rams win this game.
Yeah, and you're right. I agree with you. I think your points are spot on. If the Rams don't turn over and run the football on the edge, they're going to win. You know, the Packers, they've had an extra week now. They're rested. They're ready. Can they set the edge? So if you're the Packers on the flip side, we're going to see in this first quarter. I think in the first quarter, we're going to know. I think this will be the game where, you know, we talk about the Chiefs and Browns, like the Browns weathering that storm. I think it's the same for the Rams. We're going to find something out in that first quarter. If they're effective and LaFleur has a great game plan, if Rodgers, in them first couple drives, they set the edge and shut the Rams down and Rodgers scores, it's 10-0. This is going to be a bad, bad game for the Rams. If we're 3-3 at the end of the first quarter and both teams are running the football and the weather's really not a factor, we're going to have ourselves the game. You know, this could be the best game of the year.
I agree.
Yeah, so I think this one we're going to know right away. And for Akers has to be big. He's an X factor in this game.
Yep.
But I think the X factor is going to be for the Rams, the tackles. So Whitworth and Havenstein, they're going to have to set that edge.
Mm-hmm.
And if Preston Smith and Rashawn Gary and Za'Darius Smith are setting the edge and stopping that stretch play, that's going to be the matchup within the matchup. You know what I mean? I think that's going to be huge. Because in this first quarter, if it's 7-0, 10-0 Green Bay, this game's over. This game's over. If it's 3-3, because the Rams have had a nice drive and they kicked a field goal running the football, we're going to have a great football game.
Yeah, let me throw one more well-known stat out there now. Sean McVay, 36-0 when leading at halftime.
Is that incredible?
He's never lost a game as a head coach when they have the lead at halftime.
And tell me that the run game isn't influencing that.
Absolutely it is.
Todd Gurley was, I bet you, 20 of those.
Well, and Vinny, if you watch the Rams enough, 73% of the time Jared Goff drops back, it's in play action.
Play action, yep.
73% of the time.
Yep.
And so it's real simple with the Rams. You run the ball, you win.
Yeah,
it's really that simple. So
the only other thing we miss is we don't know for sure Aaron Donald's health.
He's going to play. He's going to be fine.
And if he does, then it's a huge boost.
Just
if
having him out there.
He's hurting and he's playing on one arm, it's going to be a problem because you know they're going to triple team him. You have to triple team him.
Even if he's
out
there.
The guy's so good.
You double team him even if he's out there.
Yeah, even if he's hurt, you still have to double team him. So it changes everything. And another interesting tidbit, Bakhtiari's not playing.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to have a backup out there against Leonard Floyd who looks lights out last couple weeks, right?
Yep.
Leonard Floyd's come on.
Yep.
That's another interesting matchup for us to watch.
Final score.
I just got a gut feeling it's going to be Aaron Rodgers. 27-17.
See, I'm going to go 26-20 Rams. I'm going to take the Rams.
And either way, we're going to know right off because you're exactly right. If they run the ball, you're right.
And
I just think they're ready at their home. It's a second year with LaFleur. I think this is year he shows he's legit and has a great game plan. He's got something to prove, too, because last year he stunk.
Playoffs were bad. I'm gonna reference that game against San Francisco last year. If Akers runs for a 120, the Rams win.
I agree with you.
Because Raheem Mostert was fantastic
last year.
If
Akers runs for 120, the Rams win.
They win the game.
No doubt.
You're going Packers. I'm going to go Rams. That brings us to New Orleans and Tampa Bay. I know who the better team is, but you throw that out when you play for a third time.
Yeah, these are division rivals playing a third time. This hardly ever happens.
Yeah, it never happens.
You got two Hall of Famers right now at quarterback. Two good offensive lines. That's really what kept these teams afloat offensively. If you think about this, the weapons, everybody's going to say Kamara, Thomas. Thomas hasn't been playing, but he'll be there, right? Godwin, Evans. The offensive lines have played great, right? They're giving them time to throw the football because Brady and Breeze, under pressure this year, do not look good. Let's just be completely honest.
Well, no,
Hall of Famers are not.
40-plus-year-old quarterback.
Correct. But, I mean, any kind of pressure, and they look not only not good, they look bad. So the offensive lines have really been unheralded in keeping both these teams afloat. But, Jordan, division rivals three times? I don't see someone beating Tom Brady three times in the same year. They're hot now. That offense is rolling. They did score 31. They didn't look great the other night, but they did score 31 against a better front than New Orleans has.
Better front, not a better secondary.
Correct.
So when you look at Tom Brady at the age of 43, why is he still effective at 43?
He has time to throw the football.
And his IQ.
And his IQ, yeah.
He can adjust.
Yes.
Right? His brain is the reason why he is still effective at 43.
Both of them.
Yeah, both
Him
of them.
Yeah,
because Drew Brees in the pocket, Drew Brees in the pocket is fine. Once you get Drew Brees out of the pocket, he's not okay.
No, he's terrible.
Not. And so I'm looking at both of these quarterbacks and the data that they have accumulated over the fact that they have played twice. Okay, and I'm going to tell you, I don't want to beat a dead horse, and I don't want to sound cliche, but it's similar to the Ram game. Who can establish the rush?
Yeah.
Who can establish the ground game? I shouldn't say the rush. The running game on the ground. Who can establish that? Because you brought Leonard Fournette in to help your cause. It's another weapon.
He looked good the other night.
And he did.
Yeah, he
did.
He was very physical.
And that's what you need, right? Yeah. You need that. As far as Kamara is concerned, Kamara is not that guy. Kamara is not the guy that is going to carry the ball 40 times a game.
No,
he's not that guy.
He's a racehorse. He's not
exactly.
A,
yeah, he's not Derrick Henry. He's not Leonard Fournette. And so in my mind, when you look at Alvin Kamara, he's just as well utilized in the slot as an extension of the run game, isn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah.
Right? That's what he is. And so because of that, I tend to favor Tampa a little bit more in this game, knowing that they can play the more ground and pound type style of ball. Right, and as far as the intermediate routes are concerned, well, that's Brady. That's a specialty there. We thought that he was going to be gunning the ball down the field with Arians' offense. He's not doing that.
No, he's not.
He's not.
Leftwich has done a nice job the last 4 or 5 weeks.
He's masked Tom Brady's deficiencies as far as the arm.
They've really come together, right?
They have.
The last 4 or 5 weeks, they've been on a run where they've looked so much more comfortable him throwing the football.
Not as good as a defense, Tampa Bay or Chicago. That's going to be a little bit easier for this New Orleans team, I think, in the grand scheme of things. This Tampa Bay defense isn't.
Can they pick the blitz up? Because you know Todd Bowles can't help himself.
No, he's going to blitz. He's going to blitz.
He's going to blitz.
Blitz, 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 blitz. I just don't know that New Orleans can score enough points the third time around to beat Tampa Bay.
It's just hard. The odds are against you. You know, it is. It's almost impossible. And how much of an X factor is Michael Thomas now? Because he didn't play a lot of football this year.
Scored his first touchdown in over a year. It was 368 days that he last scored a touchdown.
Yeah, so he didn't play much at all this year.
No, he didn't.
And is he healthy? Is he in shape? Seems to be. But, you know, for Todd Bowles, you know, he's got to be thinking to himself, okay, I've got to blitz Breeze and sit on these small routes and get me one. Because there's a chance he's going to get him one. Either an easy pick, tip ball, or even one going to the house because I don't imagine Breeze, if he's not perfectly sound with pressure in his face, he's going to throw the long ball. At this point, I don't think he can do it.
No, but.
And Todd Bowles is going to make him prove it.
Yes, but in that regard, because even if Taysom Hill's behind center, you have to blitz Taysom Hill. That's been proven. You can blitz Taysom Hill, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, but if you don't crack Kamara coming off of the edge, that's where he's dangerous. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Forget about him running in between the guards.
Yeah.
If
screens.
You don't crack him off out of the backfield, if your defensive end or your outside linebacker is not cracking him at the line of scrimmage, he will cause you problems.
Yeah.
And so you got to be aware of that.
You
got
to be aware
blitz.
Of that. And Lavonte David has to play lights out again.
Yeah, he does.
Because Lavonte David can run.
And he's going to be on Kamara.
He's going to be
in
to
coverage.
Help with Kamara. And if they blitz him, there's going to be some man coverage here. For me, Todd Bowles, early in the game, I would try it. And I'd say, I'm going to sit on the routes and prove Drew Brees. All right, you're going to throw it 40 yards to beat me with pressure in your face. Show me you can do it.
I don't think he can.
I don't know that he can either. Flip side, Dennis Allen's going to do the same thing to Brady. He's going to say, well, I'll tell you what, you want to throw it long. Bruce Arians is famous for it. And Leftwich, are you going to lose your patience? I would sit on their routes too.
It's a chess match.
This is going to be a fun game, right?
Final score.
I think this one's going to be lower scoring. In my mind, I don't think they score as much as people think. They're thinking Breeze and Brady, it's going to be 30 points. I don't see it. I think this one's going to be low scoring because they know each other so well. So I think this one's 24-20, Brady wins.
I'm going to go with Tampa as well.
24-20. I don't. The crowd's not going to matter. Weather's not going to matter.
Comes down to a field goal at the end. Yeah, I'm going to play more of that.
My X factor, I'm going to give you a hidden MVP, and you already mentioned him. I think it's Fournette.
Yeah, I mean, the way
he
played. I think
they ride Fournette.
Yeah, the way he played against Washington, it gives, you know, if you're a Buccaneer fan, it should give you hope that it's not all on Brady. It's not all going downfield. Leonard Fournette's going to alleviate some of that.
Evans looked healthier than we thought he was going to be.
Yeah.
We talked about that.
He's not healthy. He was in a lot of pain. You could tell he was in a lot of pain.
But
he came
was
up
open.
With a couple of big grabs.
He was open. He was moving around okay out there. So
23-20 Tampa.
Yeah, I'm not 24-21. 20. Same thing. Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah. Field
close
goals
game.
Are going to play
field
a factor.
Goal. Yep, I agree. I think this is Drew Brees' last game.
Probably.
I think he's going to retire. Yeah. It's his time to retire. And, we could see the end of an era there in New Orleans.
Either which way. It could be Tom Brady's last game. You don't know.
Could be. He's got a 2-year contract that he said he's coming back for, right? We've heard that. I mean, it would be a shock if Brady retired and you're expecting from Breeze, right?
No, because he's he'll be 44. It doesn't surprise me when a 44-year-old retires in professional sports, because let's be real, we haven't seen a 44-year-old since freaking George Blondo. So let's be real.
Yeah, true, good point.
So it would not
surprise me. Great point. But yeah, I'm with you. Tampa by 3. This is going to be a great weekend, though. I think
it's great football.
I think two of the games are going to be perfect, and two of the games could be the same way. But I think two of the games could be blowouts, too.
It's going to do it for us. We are out of time here on Football Tuesday. Always fun to have Eddie Ron and Ellie along for the show. We'll be back to do it again tomorrow. Be safe. We are out.